On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're tackling a trio of shows that underline the perils of reproduction. We learn the consequences of playing God when the hosts continue to run amok in, or rather out, of Westworld in that show's third season. We discover what happens when your son is an irredeemable bellend and goes off to university in Mrs. Fletcher. And we discover firsthand the horror of having three kids under eight in Breeders. And if that wasn't enough, Boyd sat down with the stars of that show, Martin Freeman and Daisy Haggard, to get an In the Trenches first-hand account when they dropped by the podcast for an interview. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, a show that has, per Beth's mandate, taken a long, hard look at our own carbon footprint and can happily report that all the intros and gags are 100% recycled and thus green as summer grass. Joining me today is the woman herself, the environmental avenger, the queen of conservation, the czar of sustainability. It's Pilot's very own dirty streamer, Miss Bethany Webb.
You got it right.
I did.
I was waiting that. I wasn't listening to another word.
You were just like, does he get my name right? Yes. I'm just going to call you Bethany from now on. That's going to be. Does anyone call you Bethany? Do your parents call you Bethany?
My grandma, when I've been very naughty. So
Bethany! Yeah. Put it down! Bethany. Take that out of your mouth! That sort of thing.
Yes. Which is how you speak to me anyway on this podcast.
Which is fine. So I can. It's like a disciplinarian kind of tone. Good. Good. We can make that work. Mm-hmm. We can make that work. Also with us today, as all days, is a man who. And this is absolutely true, has the carbon footprint of a small South American nation, but only because he's being used as a tax dodge to offset the emissions of all his celebrity friends. It's Boyd Hilton.
I think that's accurate, yeah. Well, I think when you've got a 78-inch television...
what is the footprint of your telly?
Yeah, it's a big footprint.
It can't be good.
No. And also, I'm one of those people who doesn't, you know, it does go on to, what's it called when it's on, you know, standby or whatever, and it's not really fully off. I don't unplug it and everything. It's supposed to do all that on, you know. I am terrible. I'm a disgrace to humanity.
Oh, dear boy.
Do you start getting picketed by...
Do you have one of those meters?
Greta Thunberg.
That goes... And
no.
When you turn on the TV, does it go into the red and
stop
vibrating?
I don't have any kind of meter, no. I'm just hugely wasting it. Just to, I'm a disgrace.
A one-man global
Absolute
warming phenomenon.
Disgrace, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apologies.
That's pretty shocking, I've got to be honest with you. Speaking of which, speaking of carbon footprints, this segues us almost seamlessly into what I've been watching, which is Altered Carbon.
Oh!
I've been offsetting the carbon footprint by watching that. I've now watched every episode except the last one. I've watched 7 out of the 8 episodes, and I am loving every single minute of it.
That's good going.
That's good.
I love it. I love it. It's not as neat season 2 as season 1, because season 1 is a very clear whodunit. But Anthony Mackie is an upgrade from Joel Kinnaman. So, you know, I think that's more interesting. And I like the exploration of his relationship with the protectorate guy, Jaeger. It's great, but it's the world building. I love the feel of the world. I like the idea of it. I like the terminology and all that. It's super nerdy. Also, it looks lovely.
It does look lovely.
It does, and it's far less exploitative and kind of objectifying than season 1 was, because there were an awful lot of boobs in the first one.
Well, and Willis, to be fair.
I mean, yes, but it felt... I mean, you're right. It was kind of equal opportunities.
Yeah. It was
perverama. And this one hasn't been.
Is that true? Because Anthony Mackie won't get his crown jewels out?
Yeah. I think that might be... might be a lot to do.
Yeah.
But no one is. Like, there's not a lot of...
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, like... Yeah. Maybe, I mean, it could just be that James Purefoy was in season 1 and he has it written into his contract that he has to get it out.
He walked around.
Yeah. He's
SBN.
Willie Free is his rider.
Start balling naked.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he really did.
He's big on that. But no, it's been good. I've enjoyed it.
Well, that gives me reason to carry on watching it.
Yeah, but then there were lots of issues, I think, with season 1 that people took issue with, just not just the way it portrayed women in terms of sort of objectifying, but there's... Not so much the show, but there's a sequence in the book of the first one where a character is taken into VR to be tortured, and they put them in the form of a little girl.
Oh God!
And that's a whole world of just Luckily, that isn't in the series, but that's properly problematic.
Like that bit in The Witcher where he goes into the place that's surrounded by women with their boobs out, and that's all fine because it's a virtual reality boobs out thing.
That's
not
right.
Really
women, virtual
real
boobs.
Women with real boobs out, but it's just an excuse to have a scene where there's those women with their boobs out.
But again, and I mentioned this at the time, because the showrunner is female, I felt a bit like I'm not quite sure how to approach that. Like, is it, because if it was like a male showrunner, I'd be like, oh, here we go again. You know, with a female showrunner, I was like, well, what is she, like, why is she doing it? Is it a nod to the fact that the gamers are very explicit, but then why would you do that? Is she poking, like, is there more to it that I'm missing, I suppose?
Well, I think that's a broader conversation, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, if you think about things like with Andrea Arnold in Big Little Lies and how she had that power and control taken away from her, I don't know if that's something that she's had to kind of...
Because it's Lauren Schmidt-Hisrick, and she's still showrunner, like, she's not gone anywhere.
Yeah.
And she, you know, but I wouldn't have said, like, that sequence that Boyd references in particular did not feel like it was awash with the female gaze to me.
And people, but your point is a good one, because the affair, remember, there was a big controversy about the affair, which was women co-showrunners, I think, but still allegedly, he says clumsily, exploiting something. The stars felt exploited anyway in certain sex scenes in that show. It's not, you know, I mean, it's being a female showrunner doesn't necessarily mean you're not compromising for whatever the people who are running the network or whatever want. It's a complicated thing.
It's a big learning curve, definitely. Yeah. I think we are learning from it. I mean, you're saying there in season two it deals with those issues kind of head on, which is good. It's something I noticed more with Game of Thrones as well towards the end.
Yeah, well, they got a lot of shit for that earlier.
And rightfully so.
The sex position. Again, there were willies in that too.
But when you think about, like, plot devices, rape is a plot device I take real issue with, especially all the stuff that happened with Sansa, where she was raped by
Ramsay.
I think that's what a lot of people took issue with, but it's just a big learning curve. We're coming out of a very, very misogynistic age of telly.
It's a good job that we are now completely and utterly past that, as evidenced by the British Council's website, which, and I quote, in the section under films in development, they list a number of them. They list here, well, it's the first one here is 22 Walks, which they list as type comedy. And then there's The Abominable Snowman, type horror/fantasy/sci-fi. And then we get down to Across the Water, and the genre is just woman director. Well done.
My favourite one.
Very good genre, that. Particularly enjoy that one. Nice one, British Council.
Why were you scouring the British Council website for genre?
It wasn't specific genres, but it's films in development. They have a list, and they just, apparently one of their genres is woman director, which I would argue is
interesting.
Less than ideal.
Yeah.
Hashtag not a genre.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, so what have you guys been watching? Willies or no, you know?
I mean, mine was brief. I just finished I'm Not Okay With This, and it was fine. And I would...
It was fine.
It was absolutely fine.
It was absolutely
fine. One for the poster. Absolutely fine.
Bethany Webb says.
Bethany.
Yeah. Three stars.
Absolutely fine. Watch The End of the Fucking World instead. Oh. I just...
They run out of steam.
It ended in an interesting place, but I think they should have kind of... It ended on a cliffhanger, which I think should have come with Ray through the series. But it was all the good bits of End of the Fucking World, only not the end of the fucking world.
Right.
But we've had a briefer jump between recording, haven't we? So I haven't quite watched as much as I'd like to.
Yes, we are recording this ridiculously on Wednesday. So it's basically a week before this goes out, because I'm in Dublin for the Live Empire podcast on Friday.
Selfish.
And people have booked the studio, and this was the only time we could do it. So none of you will notice a difference, except when it comes to news, and we're like, like six days out of date.
It's going to be
hang on a minute. This is news?
Special old news.
Yeah, it's a special retro. It's a retro episode of the Pilot
Talking
TV podcast.
Which, I've been watching. I stayed up till the wee small hours last night watching the Democratic Super Tuesday. Primary coverage, and I'm a big Bernie Sanders fan, so I was a bit gutted, disappointed, because it's all over, basically, by the shouting. But it reminded me that what I've really been watching, I keep forgetting to mention this, is the fact that Larry David plays Bernie Sanders in Saturday Night Live, which you can now watch on Sky Comedy in the UK every Sunday, so they show it a day later, and pretty much every week there's a sketch in which Larry David plays Bernie Sanders, and they are now become indistinguishable in my mind. I just think of them two as a one being. Two grumpy old Jewish white guys with white hair who kind of shout speak anyway, and are really funny, intrinsically funny, and they're just one. And I feel like Larry David could still become president of the United States / Bernie Sanders, I don't, whichever one ends up doing it. And it's brilliant. And Saturday Night Live is really good at the moment. It's always good in the election cycle, I think.
Yes, definitely.
When they've got something to get their teeth into. Because all the people, so whenever there's, last weekend they did a funny opener, which is kind of relating back to the previous debate, and they're really good at spoofing the debates And I bet there'll be really good spoofing, you know, the coverage of Super Tuesday. Just because the stuff that American TV pundits come out with on the likes of CNN and MSNBC is so ludicrous anyway, that it only takes a little step into satire for Saturday Night Live to take the piss out of it in a really funny way. So that's partly what I've been watching. I also wanted to mention Inside Number 9's Idea of Your Week. This week's again, which I hadn't seen in advance. And I wanted to mention how I interviewed Steve Pemberton for Pilot TV Magazine, the last issue, about this series of Inside Number, and he completely lied throughout the whole thing. He had to. But he completely misled me about this. The one that went out this week, which was basically, he directed it, and it was the first one he's directed. It was mostly talking heads, a la the classic Alan Bennett. Do you remember? Alan Bennett did a series which was literally people doing monologues to camera. And he told me it was like, you know, almost like inspired by that. And it was basically people doing talking to camera. And he was like, that's where I felt I could direct. He was being quite modest. But in the end, it was completely not that at all. It took like a classic Inside Number 9 twist and became something completely different. And it was amazing and jaw-dropping and incredible. And this series, every single week, there's been a jaw-dropping moment, which I think is so impressive for them to keep up. And I want to mention a thing called The Jewish Inquirer, also going back to the old white guy Jewish people from Bernie Sanders and Larry David. This is on Amazon Prime. I meant to mention it last week because it arrived kind of last Friday. It's created by Gary Signore, who's the wrote and directed Leon the Pig Farmer, that film. It's a thing about, if you're a North London Jewish person, as I am, you will recognise everything about this show. It's basically about a journalist working for like the fourth most successful Jewish newspaper. And it's funny, and it's charming, and it's kind of quite, and it's well done, and I really enjoyed it. It stars Tim Downey, who's been in lots of other stuff. He was in Toast of London, Upstart Crow. He's very funny in himself, and Lucy Montgomery's in it. It's got a good cast, and yeah, I recommend it.
Sounds great.
The Jewish Inquirer on Amazon Prime.
Pretty good.
Yeah. It's set in London. Is it in like
it's set in North London
Hill?
Jewish area. Yeah. It's a comedy, by the way. Did I mention that? Did I make that clear? It's a comedy.
Sounds great.
I mean, it really doesn't matter to me if it's supposed to be a comedy or not. So.
Yeah, I'm kind of right. you were kind of glazing over while I was in the middle of the explanation because you knew it was a comedy. Yeah. It couldn't have been less interesting.
I'm listening here intently. Yeah, like, this
your
great.
Reaction was good. I couldn't work out whether he was being anti-Semitic, he doesn't care about Jews, or anti-comedy. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It's the anti-comedy.
I can assure you, it's very much the latter.
All right.
Oh, okay. God.
Okay.
Wow.
What have you been watching?
Well, I told you all to come.
Yeah, we've done that, yeah.
We've already seen it. You've offset my carbon already.
I have offset carbon. Clean to that.
Anyway, let's segue now onto a listener question, which I, just despite you, haven't shared with you in advance of the podcast.
Classic.
But in this particular classic, James, in this particular one, I don't think it will matter. Dazza asks, for my job, I travel quite a bit and stay in quite a few hotels. So all I have to watch on is my iPad. There are certain shows I watch on it, such as comedy and documentaries, yet more action-based stuff I will save till I get home to watch on my big telly. For instance, if I'm away and Picard is streaming, as much as it hurts, I will wait to see it on the big screen. Yet I can happily watch Sex Education on the iPad. Do you guys have any shows you just won't watch on a small screen and ones you will?
Oh, I know your answer to that.
Go on then, what is my answer to
Picard.
That?
Isn't it?
I mean, that actually is true.
Yeah.
But
I remember you were getting very, you were in high dudgeon when we had to review it for the show because you had to watch it on your
computer
screen.
I wasn't happy at all.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Picard, I always wait for. Star Trek Discovery is another one I won't watch on my iPad as well. Weirdly, I watched the entire last two seasons of Game of Thrones on my iPad. I think because we had, we did have to review the penultimate one, but I did it anyway because I didn't want to wait. And then I stopped doing that. No, not the last season. No, the penultimate season. I watched the entire penultimate season on my iPad. The last one I didn't. I insisted on watching that at home.
Yeah.
And then because I was so upset with myself, I rewatched the entire series on my TV.
Oh, yeah, of course you did. Yeah. I remember that.
So, yeah, there are big, I think, like Altered Carbon as well. I've not been watching Altered Carbon on the train. I've only been watching that at home on my big TV. So yeah, I think there are some shows that like very visual shows that, especially ones you want to watch in 4K and like Altered Carbon because it's beautiful. You really do want to watch in 4K. I think that's that makes a difference. But with some of the Sex Education, I don't know that you like it's the visual fidelity isn't what makes that show great. Like you don't need the texture, although it does look nice. So yeah,
I'm currently. The Outsider I'm watching week by week now on I started watching. I think HBO sent something like they certainly sent 1 to 4 initially, then they sent another batch. This is the Stephen King adaptation still. I think that maybe the last one arrives on Sky on Monday, which will be when we go out. And then because that is kind of, even though it's realist and dark and quite gloomy the way it's shot, it's still beautifully done. And may I say, and in fact, I'm glad this question has been asked. So I have been saving that to watch it on my huge TV. And I have an issue with the way it looks. I suddenly, it was kind of like, you know, I don't know what the technical term is, almost like shadowing on the screen, where there's like weird noise, like visual noise, you know, in some of the dark areas of the screen of this show. And I thought it was like, I thought, oh, you know, my TV doesn't usually do this. It's pretty damn, you know.
Well, like blocking, like it's over-compressed.
Like blocking, yeah,
it's over-compressed.
Right, it's over-compressed. So then, I've got UHD, Beth, you know, I've got a fucking expensive television, that's all I'm saying. Which I didn't claim on expenses, before anyone says, I just saved up for
Came on the expenses of the environment, Boyd.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. The whole planet is paying for your TV.
Fair enough.
So I was so astonished, once I started noticing it, and then it really started distracting me. And I Googled it, and sure enough, on the like notice boards of whatever, the AV forums or whatever, people are complaining about the compression of... Yeah. So, and apparently it's HBO's fault for sending it in whatever state it is to Sky.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who put it out.
Interesting.
And I don't know whether that's because they do show it at 2 a.m. in the morning. They do that thing, you know, live, like they did with Game of Thrones and other shows. Or just because they can't be bothered to give them, I don't know, fully whatever the phrase is for not putting in such a compressed format. Mm. But it is irritating. And that makes it worse watching it on my big TV, because I can see that more than I would do if I was watching it on my laptop in this little box.
Yeah.
So it's backfired, waiting
to
watch
that
it.
Is a shame. I've noticed that on a lot of shows as well. You get banding, very obvious banding on it as well, just because it's bit-starved, essentially. They've used an insufficient bit rate for the compression
ratio. It's bit-starved.
Because they use H.265 compression ratio for UHD content.
I'm so glad that
as opposed to H.264, of course, boy, which you'll be more used to from watching things on your Apple device.
See, I knew you'd know. Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, so over-compression is not good.
Beth's, I think we can all agree.
Beth, loving the compression chat, aren't you,
Beth? We've given you enough time, sure, to think of a good answer to the question.
I mean, this is, much as you were pleased that this question was asked, this has actually had to force me to make a Pilot TV confession.
Oh my God, you watch everything on your mobile.
I don't know.
You're like Queeby, aren't you?
You're like Queeby.
I don't own a television set.
Whoa! Hang on. Hang the fuck on. You come in here like a great big fraud, offer yourself out as some kind of quote-unquote TV pundit on a popular TV podcast, and you don't own a television. Remind me, Beth, when you're not doing this podcast, what is your actual job?
I can't believe I've made it this far, to be honest.
A professional, is it film and TV critic?
That is good, though. We're tapping into a proper millennial person.
You're a monster. You're an actual monster.
So what do you...
See, I should have known from your fucking handwriting. What is this? Explain.
Mr. Darrow gave you all the clues.
You did. It's like they say, so you said, we never know. The police will be like, look, the signs were there. I can't believe you didn't realise. Come on, tell us. Why don't you have a TV?
Because I live in a house share without a living room, and I don't really like terrestrial telly.
That's
I mean, nor does James.
No. I don't like the shit reality nonsense that you watch on terrestrial telly, but there are gems. There are good things on terrestrial telly.
There can be, but why would I need a television set? I guess is the bigger question.
So what do you watch? Stage. What do you watch TV mostly on? Laptop or your phone or?
Laptop. Okay. I will go laptop. Okay. Steady. It's laptop, and I've obviously got like iPlayer 4AD, but I just don't. I don't have access to terrestrial telly. And it's not, it genuinely hasn't impacted my work whatsoever.
Wow.
To a Dazza force my hand. But it honestly has never impacted me up until now. I'd love to hear what I should be watching on a big screen that I'm not and what I'm missing out on. But
when you review films and stuff, like so second hit sort of stuff, when you're doing home end sort of review stuff, do you watch it, you know, presumably you're watching it as Martin Scorsese intended on your laptop screen?
I truly am. I've got my housemate's got a bigger set, so if I do need to watch something that I...
Or just like a large, like a 15-inch laptop.
Listen, he's got a nice big telly, so I'll usually sweet talk him if I've got something of a big...
There's a TV in the house.
In the house, but I don't personally own a television set. It is a millennial setup, I will give you that. Yeah. But, and it honestly, genuinely hasn't impacted
Do you think, and this is, I feel like I'm conducting a survey, because I always claim, when I talk about how linear, old-fashioned live TV is still a valid thing.
Yeah,
I always say that when millennials get older, when they reach, then they'll buy a TV. Like, do you think you will, or do you think this will always be the way?
I don't know, maybe. But then in terms of like viewing habits as well, like I still really enjoyed when Fleabag came out, the second season of Fleabag, because that was staggered weekly, and there was a real joy to sitting down and watching that.
This country at the moment is last series was all in one go.
Yeah,
this series they're staggering it, which I think is better because I like that being parcelled out week by week. That differs. Are you watching that on your laptop?
Yeah, I'm watching it on my laptop, fine. But it's just, you know, the communal experience is still there when I'm watching it and sharing the experience with people in terms of, like, viewing habits. It's just the way that I actually watch it it is on my laptop.
It makes me so sad.
Why?
Because it's...
What? Like, tell me what I'm missing out on, really, like, by doing that.
I just... Okay.
Adverts.
I'm turning into Woody Allen. Not like that. But I just... It's not the advert thing. I'm with you on the adverts. Like, fuck the adverts. Nobody needs the adverts. It's just like watching it on this tiny little screen. I just see you. I can imagine you just like, you know, sitting there on your bed with your laptop on your lap with a pot noodle in one hand, just like, you know, watching this. I just feel it makes me so sad.
Yeah, I don't know what this is about. Pot noodle in my whole life.
All right. Well, okay. Here's a slight adjacent question. Now, this doesn't affect you, Beth. Boy, do you have a TV in your bedroom?
Well, I have a massive open-plan flat where effectively...
It is your bedroom. Okay, because that's something I've never really understood, when people have TVs in their bedroom. I'm like, I don't understand why you'd do that, because like, I have a huge TV downstairs, and frankly, if I'm going to watch TV, I want to watch it on that. Like, I don't want to have a little TV. That doesn't make a sense. And I think it's maybe that. Like, if I have the opportunity to watch something on the huge TV, that's how I want to watch it. Like, it's so much more immersive. It's beautiful. You see the detail. It's like absorbing. Whereas I watch stuff on my iPad just out of necessity because of the sheer volume of stuff we have to watch. I have to watch it on my commute. So I'll just suck it up and get on with it. But I certainly wouldn't choose.
I'm the same, but I think Beth is probably more representative of
young people.
Real people.
And why Queeby is becoming a thing.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to hear what people think. So if you are listening to the Pilot TV podcast and you have access to Twitter, for example, do jump on at me, Beth and Boyd, and tell us about this. I'm curious. Like, do people have TVs? Do they watch stuff on their phones, on their iPads? Do they have them beamed into their eyeballs? What is it young people do with entertainment these days? It baffles me slightly. I think I'm slightly old school. Like, you know, I love to see a film in the cinema.
Slightly.
You know, okay, yes, I'm very old school.
I think you're proving you're very
old
school.
I like to see a film in the cinema because it's all about immersion, is it? It's all about, like, it eclipses all other realities, and the only thing that exists is you in this chair and that film, and there is nothing else in the world. And I think trying to replicate that at home is at the heart of what makes, you know, it so much fun to watch TV, that you can kind of immerse yourself in it. And I just can't imagine being able to do that at home on a small screen.
I mean, I agree with you, but you know. But I think we have to face the reality that Beth is more representative of what's happening.
Yeah, please don't burn me at the stake.
No,
please. Yeah. I mean, you two are here, but who knows what's going to happen now? That it's like the bloody Wild West on Twitter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's like Bethany Webb.
Don't pile on.
That TV fraud.
If there's a pile on, I'm going to be absolutely furious.
All right. Wow, this has been... thank you, Dazza. You have, you've shone a light on an awkward truth.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dazza, for that particular question. If you would like to ask any questions about, I don't know, our viewing habits or our deep, dark secrets, as will be unearthed as what shall now be called the confession segment, feel free to DM at Pilot TV Mag on Twitter, and we will trawl through the various questions, and yours might be the one we alight upon. But at this point, shall we get on to a section we would normally call news, but in this week we are going to call stuff that happened roughly a week ago.
Yeah, we've got to, yeah. This morning, they announced, BritBox announced that they're bringing back Spitting Image.
Now, which, just to be clear, are you being paid to say this?
No.
This is like an added bonus, like a gratis thing you're doing for
BritBox,
them?
BritBox representative moment passed months ago. It was a brief moment.
Oh, I see.
It was a brief moment.
So this is purely pro bono.
I was being paid by
the
BritBox.
The face of BritBox.
Yes. To do a thing online, and that happened. Now that's gone. Sadly, I mean, if they want to bring me back and pay me more money, that's fine. But they did announce, their first proper commission is to bring back Spitting Image. When I grew up watching Spitting Image, I used to love it, and it was properly harsh, satirical, you know, full on. It caricatured. I mean, famously, I think David Steele's wife, maybe someone like that, said that the caricature of him, this tiny little man, affected his career.
Sitting on David Owen's shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, she said it ruined his career. I mean, what subsequent come out
it's
of
what Bo Selector did to Craig David.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It had a proper effect on the way you regarded politicians, didn't it, I think.
Norman Lamont had a yogurt pot on his head.
Yes, who's the one with the peas? Is it Norman Tebb eating peas with Margaret
I don't
Thatcher?
Remember. Michael Heseltine. It was Roy Hattersley was spraying water everywhere. Remember that one?
Yeah. It was John Major who ate peas. Anyway.
And he was great.
So boring.
He was great.
Anyway, it was, I mean, like anything, again, like Saturday Night Live, it was variable. Sometimes there'd be terrible bits and embarrassing bits, but every week, it felt like a must watch.
Yeah.
TV. And I think it makes absolute sense to bring it back, because there have been, frankly, terrible attempts to do that kind of thing. There've been a couple on ITV, like with like CGI. They did one. They did another one with animation. Never worked. And they put them in that Sunday night slot. It used to be on a Sunday night, 10:00 or 10:30, and they all failed the attempts to kind of capture Spitting Image. So just do it again. Just bring it back with the right people involved, and it should be good. So yeah, I'm excited about that.
So am I actually. But that was trying. Did you buy the Chicken Song single?
I don't think I needed to buy it because it was constantly being played every hour of the day. Why would you need to buy it? Fuck's sake.
I had the 12-inch version.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay, good. Beth, anything jump out at you?
No, other than to say Spitting Image, my parents used to watch it, and when I was little, it gave me nightmares because I didn't appreciate a satire. It was just a bunch of really terrifying puppets.
It's amazing.
Absolutely scared the shit out of me. So not looking forward to that coming back, really.
Sorry.
That's absolutely fine. I mean, I scoured all the news outlets for news, but coronavirus has just landed a big stopper in most developments in reality shows and everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and they're supposed to be having it. This is a very much a kind of first world TV critics problem section, but they're Disney Plus, which is still launching March 24th. Mm. Extra on your brain. They were supposed to have a big launch for journalists and media people like us this week, and they've cancelled the whole thing. It was like a 2-day thing, wasn't it? Mm. They were having like a party, an evening, a press conference, a junket.
Yeah,
the whole thing cancelled because of the virus.
And you're livid that you're not going to get your Volafont.
I'm mildly livid. Yeah, that I'm not getting free food and drink. But yeah, I mean, I think if it carries on like this, then it's going to affect a lot of actual things.
Yes, I think you're right. Look, junkets, set visits, things like that. I mean, we'll all be able to, I suspect, do our jobs. There'll be lots of phoners in our future, I suspect.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of phoners in my presence.
Yes. Sorry, it won't change that much.
Yeah. I interviewed Ricky Gervais this week. I think I can say that. Well, I've said it now. I interviewed Ricky Gervais this week for the new series of Afterlife, coming soon to Pilot TV in the future. I think that starts on April 24 as well. So around that time. And I was, you walk in, because he's quite germophobic anyway. Like, he's quite kind of, he hates people slurping, sneezing, coughing, anything in his company. Famously hates it.
Yeah.
And I've known that very well. I've discussed it many times.
But you sneezed in his face.
So I was like, really, like, I don't want to give you coronavirus. I don't want to come, I don't want to think I've got it. So I didn't shake his hand or anything. And I kept well clear. I had the podcast interview stuff to put down. But then at the end of it, he did give me a hug. I was like, oh, okay. And I thought, he's fine. He's dealing with it.
He sneezed on his back.
And I sneezed on his back and rubbed it in.
Yeah. We could all end up having to do this podcast remotely.
What that was an elaborate way of name dropping Ricky Gervais.
Yes, you did that well.
Yeah,
you did that well.
And to say that I think I can say I've seen the whole of Series 2.
Oh, good, good. And you're embargoed, presumably. Heavily embargoed.
Whoa.
Whoa. Make of that what you will, an ambiguous
whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa. You must have some news, James.
Sure, I'm sure I could make something up. What to say? I have a list of things here. Mark Ruffalo confirms he's in talks to potentially join Disney Plus's She-Hulk. That is exciting.
Other Mark Ruffalo news. I thought you were talking about the other Mark Ruffalo news.
It's a good week for news.
Yeah. It's a good Ruffalo week.
You know he's in this show on HBO called I Know This Much Is True, which is playing identical twins.
Yes. It's Ruffalo and Ruffalo.
Ruffalo and Ruffalo. How good is that? I mean, one Ruffalo's good, but two Ruffalos for the price of one.
What is the collective noun for many Ruffalos?
Ruffali.
Yeah.
A Hulk of Ruffali.
Also, and it's written, this thing is created by, now I can't pronounce the director's name, Derek...
Cerfrance. Yes.
Exactly.
Because Catherine Hahn's in it.
Yes.
Who we're going to talk about later.
Yeah. I think we may have done it as a news story, but the fact this is happening and is arriving April 27th on HBO, which means it shouldn't be too much longer on Sky.
Yeah,
this feels like an incredible project.
Because he's Derek, the guy who did Blue Valentine, and
which was brilliant. I love Blue Valentine.
Great.
Yeah,
I'm
very
really
excited about it. Yeah, so that's arriving soon. It's called I Know This Much Is True.
Completely commandeered your news.
Okay, here's a little bit of news. Killing Eve's Kim Bodnia has joined The Witcher Season 2 as Vesemir. How excited are you about that, Beth?
Ooh,
oh, love Vesemir,
so
don't you?
Excited. If I love one thing, James, it's Vesemir.
Yeah, Vesemir, of course, being the sort of elder witcher who takes Geralt under his wing, like almost like his adopted father. He's a senior witcher.
I mean, that's a pretty obvious casting choice, in which case.
I think it's good. So he plays this villanelle's handler from Killing Eve.
Yeah.
And he obviously joins Game of Thrones, Christopher Hivju? How do you pronounce it?
I don't know.
We
said this last week, didn't we? Beardy Ginger.
Beardy Ginger from Game of Thrones, who's also joined The Witcher Season 2. So I'm very excited about all things Witcher, but that shouldn't come as a shock to anyone.
Is Vesemir, by any chance, one of the survivors of the massacre of Kaer Morhen?
Oh, yes, Kaer Morhen, yes. Oh, Boyd.
I printed that.
Boyd.
Yes. Yeah,
oh, you make me so proud sometimes.
I have no idea what that means.
Oh, so. Next, you'll be sketching out The Witcher's signs on the table.
I won't. No.
Throwing out an Igni or an Or.
No.
pod or a Jordan?
Absolutely not. No. Courtney Cox. Have you seen the Courtney Cox news? Courtney Cox, Sharon Horgan news.
No, hit me with it.
Go on.
Yeah, Courtney Cox has signed on for a starring role in Starz horror comedy pilot, co-written by Sharon Horgan.
Yes.
The half-hour series follows a dysfunctional family that moves from the city to a small town into a house in which terrible atrocities have taken place. But no one seems to notice except for Cox's character, who's convinced she's either depressed or possessed. I'm full on happy about this whole idea. Courtney Cox back, Sharon Horgan co-creating it. What's not to enjoy about that?
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I wanted a good, juicy role for Courtney Cox.
Definitely.
I think she's definitely, since Cougar Town, even Cougar Town.
Yeah, it wasn't great, was it?
It was ups and downs, but that's amazing.
Yeah.
Seen that Ben Schnetzer has taken over from Barry Keoghan in Why the Last Man. So Barry Keoghan was playing Yorick, the main in Why the Last Man, and he dropped out.
Is that how you pronounce Barry's name?
Barry Keoghan.
Yeah. I always thought it was something like Keegan or Keegan.
That's Kevin Keegan, where there's a footballer from the 80s.
I mean, very good. Yeah,
thank you. Okay. I knew some sports stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Barry Keoghan.
Okay.
I mean, you've now challenged me
on
it.
Have you interviewed him and said that to his face?
No, but I'm pretty certain that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
So, Why the Last Man, based on the graphic novel series about the only man left alive, Yorick, and his little monkey Ampersand. It's really good series of comics. If people haven't read them, I strongly recommend them.
Who stepped in for him, sorry?
It is Ben Schnetzer.
I don't know who that is.
Well, he's Ben Schnetzer.
He's been in stuff.
No, he has been in stuff. He was best known for the Book Leaf. He was in Snowden, Riot Club, I think. He was in Pride as well. He's in Pride too.
Oh, okay.
He's very likable. Yeah. Very likable actor. Yeah.
Affably faced young
affably
Brit.
Faced. Arguably. Affably faced. What a brilliant phrase.
It is. Yeah. Arguably, I would say a better piece of casting than Barry Keoghan.
Barry Keoghan's brilliant.
I love him.
He's quite intense, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not Yorick for me.
Okay.
He doesn't feel like Yorick.
We wouldn't know that, alas.
And I'm not saying that if there were only one man left alive, you'd be shortchanged if it was Barry Keoghan. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that as the character of Yorick,
is this whole thing just a man and his monkey?
One man and his monkey.
There's got to be other people could turn up.
There's lots of women in it, but he's the only male.
So
all men have been wiped out except for Yorick and Ampersand, his capuchin monkey.
Good premise.
And so there are Amazons in it. There's a whole thing. So he's journeying.
I was slow on the uptake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds wicked.
Can we do a little brief tribute to James Lipton? Did you see this?
I will say one thing though, that he is the only man left alive. Yeah, he still gets paid 30% more than all the women in the comics.
Are you serious? No,
that was a delayed, belated joke.
That's my sense of humour. Sorry.
What was funny about that was you had to then interrupt me doing a tribute, a warm and touching tribute to the late great James Lipton, who died this week.
So
okay, stop again. Right, fine, do your tribute. No.
Right.
Start your tribute again.
Can we just do a lovely tribute to the late great James Lipton, who died this week, host of Inside the Actor's Studio? I religiously watched Inside. I think I've seen every single fucking one. Even people I actively don't like. and he was 93.
Wowza.
Yeah. So the phrase "good innings" comes to mind, because he was in his mid to late 80s when he was still going strong, doing when the show became kind of iconic. Every episode was astonishing. He was very famously kind of, I wouldn't say it wasn't a kind of probing, kind of in depth. It was in depth, but he definitely wasn't trying to trip them up. He was like trying to elicit, proper ideas of how they worked and why they loved acting and all of that. And the Jennifer Aniston one comes to mind. I think Jennifer Aniston's greatest ever interview is her Inside the Actor's Studio, if you can find it. I mean, I'm sure it's on somewhere, Sky Arts or somewhere
great.
Like that.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. And he was so great at bringing out really interesting stories from people. Yeah, so James Lipton.
Oh, how old was he?
93.
93 years old.
Good mileage.
And there were 240 episodes of it. How about that?
That's a lot.
That's a
lot of Actor's Studio.
Yeah.
And you've watched all of them?
Well, I mean...
Let's quiz him.
I probably haven't. Yeah. But various people did three or four times. Ricky Gervais did it, had a really good one. Yeah. Anyway, I'll stop there.
Ashley Zuckerman has landed the title role in NBC's Robert Langdon show. You know, the Dan Brown Lost Symbol thing.
Now, is it prequel?
It's based on The Lost Symbol, which is one of the books.
Okay.
I don't know where in the Langdonverse The Lost Symbol takes place, and I absolutely don't want to know.
So he's the Tom Hanks character?
Yeah.
Right.
He's Robert Langdon.
Okay.
So, awesome. What else is happening? WandaVision has wrapped production. That's a thing that's happening. Emily Allen Lind is to star in HBO Max's Gossip Girl reboot. So that's a little bit of casting news, but I guess I'm really using this as an example. Like, what do we think about this? Because Gossip Girl's a relatively recent show. Yeah. It seems like a strange thing to be rebooting.
they're rebooting. I mean, this is quite a blasé statement, but aren't they just rebooting bloody everything at the moment?
Yeah.
Absolutely everything. So I'm not surprised at it. If anything, I'm surprised it's not been done sooner.
It's barely cold.
Or there was a spin-off, you know, about them as they were younger. You know, I just don't care.
I think it was 8 years ago, though.
It's just that I'm really old. I mean, it happened yesterday. It was nearly
terms,
a decade.
Yeah, or in reboot slash remake terms. And I've got that story. It says, it's HBO says, it will follow a new generation of New York private school teens who are introduced to the social surveillance of the Gossip Girl site. So it will be about social media.
So it's less
of
a reboot than it is a kind of spiritual sequel.
Right.
Yeah,
it's like, let's do Gossip Girl, but with Instagram, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that makes sense. But I suppose, and that's an interesting point, isn't it? That it is quite recent, but suddenly the landscape for teenagers has changed catastrophically. Perhaps that is the right word. In that period of time, like that, social media has taken on a life of its own in the last decade. So
yeah,
it fundamentally has changed the teenage experience.
Mm. Absolutely. I think, given in Gossip Girl, I remember they used to like use beepers. I think it was
a
little Nokia,
Blackberries, and pages and stuff. Yeah,
pages. Pages were a real thing back then.
Yeah.
And is it they used to get all text alerts because they weren't like, I went and said, oh, we've just looked, we've got this thing on Instagram. Like they would, it was very old school. Yeah. It's like the only thing that really dates the West Wing is they've got all these sort of CRT VDU monitors and they all use pages and don't really like, and they have little flip top startup mobile phones.
I wonder whether the big challenge of Gossip Girl surely is, do they go full on kind of, you know, Euphoria style teen Sex Education style, you know, proper unvarnished look at teenagers now, or do they? Because the actual Gossip Girl, even though it was clever and smart, it was very glossy.
It was glitzy, glamoury, upper East Side, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And that's just.
I wonder if
that'll
feel dated if they try if they do that now.
They're going to have to adapt. They're going to have to also incorporate some characters of colour and make it a little bit less, for want of a better word, rapey and.
Yeah.
If they could give it a better sort of shake up. Sure, but this is where we are.
It'll
now,
be
I
a test of your theory that you said last week about how. BBC
can't write kids. Yeah,
which you had people agreeing with you.
Yes, you did. You got some love for that on Twitter.
I did.
Before they knew you didn't have a TV.
Before I ended it all. Yeah.
I watched episode 2. I meant to say this earlier, of Noughts and Crosses, by the way, which is so much better than episode 1.
Oh really?
Yeah.
This would be where I say, surely you should have watched 3 in a row.
I should have watched it. You're right.
Is that Jake last week?
Yep. Sorry. As I said, 100% recycled.
This is James Dyer talking about King of the recycled running joke.
So you watched the second episode. Tell us about it, please.
Oh no, it was just much. I liked the first episode anyway, and I thought they did a decent job of adapting. As I said at the time, I don't want to repeat myself. A complex, difficult book with a huge backdrop. Episode 2 feels more focused and somehow less clunky. Because I did agree there were clunky moments in the dialogue in episode 1 when they were introducing all these characters, and it felt like they just had to get you to understand who they were. Episode 2 relaxes a bit and yet is also kind of compelling and interesting. It's just a better episode, I think. So I'm not saying you were wrong. I'm just going to carry on watching it myself.
No, I mean, we only watched an episode. I'm sure you watched it if it's settled into
it. It is hard to judge sometimes from one episode.
It's going to be an issue, particularly about one show this week, may I say.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I should look forward to this. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Any other news?
No. That's
Day of the Dead is getting a 10-episode run on Sci-Fi. I don't know if anyone's excited by a bit of Romero zombie action. And what else have we got? I think that is roughly it.
That's
for
enough
news.
Old news.
Just that we've got Simpsons, haven't we?
Oh, Simpsons
Disney Plus.
On Disney Plus.
That
was
a new revelation that I don't know what else we really talk about with that.
Simpsons. It was quite nicely revealed, wasn't it? In a little.
With a little donut spinning around. That was cute.
Okay, well, that is it for news. Time now for this week's interview, in which Breeders stars Martin Freeman and Daisy Haggard stop by to talk about their quite alarmingly sweary comedy about the dark side of child rearing. Our very own Boyd Hilton went along to find out more about that one, and this is what happened. That was Martin Freeman and Daisy Haggard, which takes us into this week's reviews. So, unfortunately, it is a Sky/Now TV triple bill this week. So, apologies to those of you who don't have either of those.
We're not being sponsored by them.
Yes, this is not like Boyd's
honestly,
not been given a
I'm
massive
not being
check
paid,
for this.
But there are only, and I just feel like, full disclosure, the only interesting new series this week were all on Sky. It's just
That's fair.
Sorry, Netflix, Amazon Prime.
Sorry, Beth, I should have been clear. Sky is a satellite service, so people with televisions, what they do is they get it beamed into their house.
Here
and labels them to watch.
I mean, he's patronising the best of times.
No, I know. special. You can get Now TV on your laptop as well. So
yes,
yes, fine.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, our Sky/Now TV loving begins with the long-awaited third season of Westworld. Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan's show has shed its cowboy trappings for this one, reinventing the show in the wake of Dolores' jailbreak at the end of the last one. And it's now into a sort of hard sci-fi show in a sort of futuristic cityscape. So it's a big change of tone and pace for this one. Evan Rachel Wood returns, joined this time around by the likes of Breaking Bad's Aaron Paul, Sons of Anarchy's Tommy Flanagan. And it's very different. So, boy, does Westworld still have the hosts with the most.
What a blessed relief, is all I'd say.
Agree completely.
I really did not like season two of Westworld. I found it...
But do you feel like the narrative around it has changed a bit?
You've got two words out there, boys.
No, but I'm saying, we all talked about this on the show, but I went like, when we watched it, when you and I and Terry watched it, like, we did enjoy it. And some of the episodes, like particularly the ones where, you know, where Tandy Newton goes to the Shogun world, like, we were like, this is amazing television. It's really good.
Yeah, there was one brilliant episode.
Yeah, the Native American one. Yeah,
right. But I remember at the time, I'm pretty sure at the time I expressed my increasing frustration with it.
Yeah,
that it got more
slow
and
more. It just labyrinthine.
Got overly labyrinthine. Mm. And it was the puzzle box. I think there's a difference between, it's kind of two types of puzzle box TV mysteries, if you like. There's one, like Westworld, where the mystery is the creators of the show telling the story in a deliberately oblique and challenging and complicated way, deliberately to test if you can kind of understand what is going to happen in the end, if you like. So, and with West, I mean, the twist in series one is a classic example of it, where the twist was not an organic thing in the narrative. It was, the twist was in the way there was a timeline you didn't know was a separate timeline. So that's like a twist in their narrative technique, not in the actual story. And I feel like season two, like, doubled down on that. And it was like all the twisty elements, all the surprises were all, oh, you didn't know this. Like, there were like five timelines, I think, even more fucking timelines. I remember the finale, I had no idea what was going on by the time I got to the finale, and all those different places that were real or weren't real.
Is it like that Poirot thing where when he tells you the murder is this thing that you could not possibly have known was actually what happened? Yeah. You're like, what?
Right, exactly.
Apologies to all French listeners.
Plus, I felt they really did milk that setting, the Western setting and the genre to its death. I mean, it felt quite frustrating and tedious. And I could only do so much of what's his name wandering around looking confused. Jeffrey Wright's character, Bernard.
Love Bernard.
So this arrives, season three arrives, and I think explicitly the creators have addressed this fact. Because immediately it's a coherent, quite old-fashioned, story about how the robots, effectively, what are they called? The hosts.
The hosts, yes.
Thank you. Robots. They are robots. They're the most sophisticated robots in the history of the whatever. Even more than like replicants in Blade Runner, etc. Even more than the things in Altered Carbon. I mean, they are, but to all intents and purposes, human, aren't they? But with mechanical things, because they've still got emotions. And I mean, Evan Rachel Wood's character is now central, and she is enacting her revenge. She wants to destroy the human race, basically. And there's various people setting out to stop her, the corporation that ran Westworld and owned Westworld. That's it. It's like she is now in the real, quotes, world, away from Westworld itself, the park, and she is a danger to all humans, especially. She's definitely wreaking revenge, particularly on the ones who went to the park and abused her. And it's much easier to follow. It's still got mysterious elements. They introduce his character. So Aaron Paul's character, you're not quite sure who he is and what he is and what he's doing. He's having kind of visions, I think.
Yes, he seems like an ex-soldier suffering a certain amount of PTSD and grieving for his lost comrades and having difficulty readjusting into society.
But how he fits in with the story is kept from you a little bit, you know, without wanting to spoil it. And who and why. And there's if you watch episode two, I watch episode two, which is Tandy Newton comes back. Yeah. She's not in episode one. Mm. And that there's a line in that where someone talks about simulation within a simulation. And I was already like, oh my God, we are heading back into the territory of season two. But it was still much clearer to me. And even though really weird things happen in episode two, it's kind of saying, yes, they don't understand what's going on either. And we're trying, and it is like a matrix within a matrix within a simulation, but it's less annoying. I wasn't annoyed by it at all. Mm. It looks incredible.
Doesn't
it? I think the whole shiny cityscape of the future, the near future, but enough for everything to be weird and off kilter. It uses brilliant locations. I mean, a lot of it's set in London of the future, set in LA of the future. It all looks completely real. I believed in all of it, which I think is a difficult thing to pull off.
In the way that Blade Runner does, where it feels like an entirely different...
Yeah.
It gives you a real sense of place.
Right. Brilliantly conceived, detailed look at what the future would be like in this world. So I really enjoyed it, and I'm fully back in, is what I'm saying.
It's had some really interesting ideas as well. Like, it's got the idea of, like, a crime Uber, which I absolutely loved. Like, I want to commit a crime. What's going on that I can join in? I'll do this. It'll boost my rating. I was like, this is something someone's actually going to do.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that, but I think the prologue for this was a real statement of intent. So there's a prologue where Dolores pays someone a visit at their house, and there is nothing about that sequence that wasn't brilliant. Like, it was slightly opaque at first. What's going on? She was really sinister, and just I love the character of Dolores, and I love the journey that she's been on from when we first meet her as this kind of, like, you know, farm girl sort of victim character to this absolutely hard as nails kick ass machine. And you're really with her in this, and you get the sense that, I don't know, like when you mentioned getting revenge on people who visited the park, I never got the impression it was a revenge thing. I think she
really
has functions she needs to fulfill in the real world, and she knows these people from the park, and she's prepared to make no qualms about, like, treating them harshly because of the way they've treated her. But, like, there's a sense that's not her primary objective. Like, she's there to do a job, and frankly, if she has to kill someone, then she will do.
I had a completely different interpretation.
Okay.
I was full on, this is revenge.
You just said she's taken actions against them because of the way they've treated
her.
Well,
no, but it's more opportunistic. Like, she's out there, like, she needs, I'm trying not to give away plot points, but she needs to achieve certain things, and this is her way of doing it. I think the ability to, shall we say, give them some comeuppance, I think, is secondary to what she's trying to achieve.
Oh, I disagree.
By meeting them.
She's an angry lady.
Oh, and with good reason. But she's extremely good in this, and I think they really sort of utilise the fact that she is a machine and is tied into the machine world to sort of experiment with what she can and can do, what she isn't capable of. And the fact that people don't know that hosts exist outside the park is another interesting kind of plot thread running through this. I thought this was super, super stylish. There's an ATM heist set to, and at the risk of seeming woefully out of touch, I'm going to call it some kind of weird dubstep grind hybrid.
Amazing.
Anyway, some sort of popular music was playing, and it was very, very good. But I really enjoyed that sequence. I thought it was really, really slick.
A Common People by Pulp is a big sense of Common People.
Tessa Thompson comes back, and I was like, yes, I'm glad she's still in it. That also, when she turns up at a party, and all I'm going to say is that wardrobe change.
Brilliant.
Is extraordinary. Yeah. John Gallagher Jr. turns up from The Newsroom and one episode of The West Wing.
We got Lena Waithe as well. No one told me Lena fucking Waithe is in this.
Yeah.
Being boss.
Yeah,
she's
brilliant.
Wicked. She's absolutely in on the heist, so she's got the kind of storyline of Aaron Paul as well. I love her. I was so excited when she kind of popped up. Yeah.
Were you, Beth, so did you were you a Westworld fan?
So I watched a fair amount of the first season. Mm. I don't know why I didn't finish it. Maybe something
you're
else
not alone. A lot of people gave up.
I was really enjoying it. Maeve's arc I found to be the strongest in that first season. The second, so I was watching it after it had all aired, and I just heard so many bad takes on the second season that I thought I'd just prioritise watching other stuff.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then I came back to this. The first episode was so good. They have chucked money at this.
Yeah.
Like flawless.
It's all on screen as well. Yeah.
All at once. Just absolutely flawless. So slick and stylish. And this new world, I think, is very refreshing. Like you say, it was a blessed relief because it's anyone's game at this stage as to where they could have gone with this. Mm. And they were very sensible. The second one lost me a little bit. I thought it was quite sparing with its twists in the pilot, not in the pilot, but the first episode. Second one, I felt like it was slightly more fan fiction-y.
Oh, yeah.
Like, definitely pandering to fans. There are a lot of, like, simulated scenarios that had Maeve in, like, with a very plummy British accent. And I know she's British, but, you know, and kind of dressed up in this very romanticised way. And then the twists come and come and come. I like Bernard's beard. That was worth noting. So shout out to Bernard's beard.
I love Jeffrey Wright.
He's undercover in, like, in an abattoir, isn't he? Yeah. At the start with this big boss beard. He looks very biblical to begin with, and he gets to do some cool, like, fist throwing stuff.
I very much enjoyed that sequence.
It was amazing. The evil boss from A Star Is Born is in it. I can't remember what his name is, but I was like, I remember you piece of shit. And
wow.
This one's for Jackson. And
is that Simon Coulson? Lee Sizemore, that character, is that, is he in Star Is Born?
He's got a crap name in A Star Is Born, and I just remember it's always Fault. But he's in it and he's crap. The one person I didn't like, I've forgotten his name, but the character with the cane was a bit crap. that Maeve is allies with the British guy.
Oh, no, that is him. Yes, yeah, so that's him.
Oh, that's him.
Yeah, he is. He's always been a bit crap.
He's a bit crap.
Yeah, so Lee Sizemore, that character, has always been a bit crap.
He's the weak link. But no, there's a new character and he's played by the boss from Star Is Born, who I have not forgiven. So I remembered he was in it. But no, it was very sick, very stylish. I'll probably stick with it, but the second episode lost me a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I'm very much going to stick with this. Enjoyed it enormously. Cinematography was beautiful. Production design was off the scale. It was lavish. It was stunning. It's the kind of thing you want to watch on a massive great fuck off telly, Beth, in 4K.
Yeah, that's
I'm just
true.
Saying.
Let me. My one critique, and this I think is goes for the whole thing so far, is they can't do comedy. They can't do humour, rather. So there are some really clunky attempts at humour. Even like in episode 2, when Tandy Newton's with the English doofus, and he at one point she says like he's trying to be seductive a bit, and her responses to that were really clunky. I thought really clunkily written and kind of not funny, and they're all being a bit twee. Their attempts at humour, I think they're much stronger on absolute serious, you know, hardcore sci-fi and philosophical ideas about what is reality, to what extent can AI, artificial intelligence, work, and, you know, what happens if you follow it. All of that stuff is brilliant. When they try and be a bit funny, I think it comes across really twee. And there are a couple of moments like that, particularly in episode 2, I think that just weren't needed. Like, you know, I could almost sense like Tandy Newton kind of bristling that she had to say these things to show that she was, kind of... in the slightly cliched ends of her character aren't helped by some of the dialogue she's given.
But first episode has some full frontal male nudity in there, presumably to try and make up for the fact that Tandy Newton had spent an awful lot of time naked in seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah, she is a little bit in this. I hope they don't, because the second episode leans quite heavily on manipulating her and degrading her quite a lot. I hope we don't see too much else of that. Yeah. Is all.
No, I agree.
Well, hard to say where this series will go. I mean, I have no idea.
No.
But I think that's always true. This very excited to find out, though. So that is Westworld, which comes to Sky Atlantic and Now TV and drops on Monday, March the 16th at 2 a.m.
And 9 p.m.
And then repeats again at 9 p.m. and normal people. If you're not up at 2 a.m., don't worry about it. You can watch it later.
Yeah.
Or, you know, on catch up. Next up this week, the first in what turned out to be a double bill of what I'm going to dub contraceptive television. Breeders sees two struggling parents played by Martin Freeman and Daisy Haggard tackling life with a newborn and two slightly older siblings using as parenting manual the lesser known Gina Ford book, Why Your Baby is a Motherfucker and You Should Tell It So. This is a show so sweary, this even actually made me blush, and genuinely features at one point Martin Freeman hurling C-bombs at a clock. Beth, happy families or baby blues?
Oh, this stressed me out so much, and I don't even have kids or a television set, but I'm just going to own this now. I loved this, though. So this is written by, it's Chris Addison and Simon Blackwell, is that here?
Yep.
And Martin Freeman as well. I think it's the most surprisingly nuanced take on parenthood that I've seen on screen in a while. It's filthy as well, which I absolutely love.
It really
love.
Is, yeah.
And it starts with this great inner monologue. Well, he's obviously saying to himself, but it's Martin Freeman kind of talking himself into going up and having a confrontation with his children, who are up late on a very important night for him. Like, he's got a big day the next day. And it starts with him downstairs kind of psyching himself up to go upstairs and confront his kids in a way that doesn't make them cry. And he's like, come on now, because then if they cry, you're going to feel terrible. Don't do it yourself. Don't do it. And he's psyching himself up. And you know he's going to go and shout until he cries and they cry and everyone's upset. You know it's coming, but you're with him every step of the way. And when he goes in and inevitably loses it and screams and swears and fucks in their faces, you're just like, oh, but you meant so well. And I just think that sets it off on just the right foot. It was so brilliantly written. I love the swears. I mean, the swears are parenting, isn't it?
Mm.
Whether you say them out loud or not, it's just those first 18 years of your life, I imagine, are one big swear. Loved this, absolutely loved this. And it was good to see Martin Freeman do something, because he's so skittish, isn't he? His whole demeanor is skittish, and he's saying this thing and then he's over, you know, another thing, and then just very quick mood changes, and his face is doing a million things at once. And that conflict that he wears so well, I think, just makes him perfect for this. I really enjoyed it, even though, as I say, stressed me the fuck out.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I remember, you know, classic name drop. I interviewed Freeman on the set of Sherlock years ago, and I never forget. It was so clear in my mind that we interviewed him in the cafe next to in the Baker Street set. You know, it's the cafe they use constantly that where he would meet Sherlock.
And,
yeah, it was fantastic. So I had a quite a big chat with him, and he was brilliant. And then until his kids came in from school, he picked up from school, and they ran in. We were across a table in this cafe, and he got really stressed out because he didn't want the journalist, i.e., me, not in any horrible way. Or I'm just with you. He's just really stressed out with the idea of anyone seeing him and his kids, because it's just stressful, having your kids interrupting a professional moment. And when I interviewed him for this podcast, it was clear that he's using his own experiences like that, of just the stress, the daily stress of being a parent, is so brilliantly done. And it's such a simple concept, really. And it's kind of like the concept of Motherland, really, the Sharon Horgan show as well. But that obviously is much more focused literally on the mothers, with one exception. And even he is kind of like, he's their mother, effectively. Gender heteronormative stereotypes, forgive me for using those. But the idea is literally, let's do an ultra-realist look at the daily nightmares of parenting. And it's brilliant. And it's all in the writing and the performances. I think he and Daisy Haggard, who I love, Back to Life, Daisy's own show that we reviewed last year, didn't we? Was a brilliant piece of TV, that, and she's doing another series. I'm really excited about that. But the chemistry between her and Martin Freeman, they do know each other. They've known each other for a while in real life. It's so effortless. You totally believe they are a couple. They've just reminded me of real couples I know with kids. It's so brilliantly observed. I think Simon Blackwell and Chris Addison's directing a lot of it. I think they've done such a great job of, it looks great. It's shot in London. It makes London look really nice, but not like, so you're sitting back going, oh, that looks nice. It's still, every single scene works for being either funny or brilliantly observed or dramatic. Michael McKean pops up from Spinal Tap as her dad, as a dodgy dad, a good for nothing day at dad. I mean, he is an absolute fucking legend from, of course, the Breaking Bad prequel as well, although his character died. And I just love it. Yeah, it's really, really great. And you're right, see Martin Freeman in just, I feel like the character that's very close to him, and that moment, that's why I mentioned that moment, it felt like that little moment was something out of this show. And I think it's great.
Yeah, it is. I got that. Like, I watching this, because Martin Freeman has talked in interviews about how it irritates him the way when people come up to him, they expect him to be Tim from The Office. Mm. They expect him to be Dr. Watson. That's not who he's like. And funnily enough, I don't know him in the slightest, but I felt this felt like a really genuine role. Like, there was much more of Martin Freeman in this than maybe anything else he's ever done.
Yeah.
This shocked me quite a lot. And don't get me wrong, I have absolutely no problem with swearing, and as anyone who listens to this podcast and the explicit rating, which I think I'm responsible for, and Terry, will know. But
wait till you hear my interview with Ricky Gervais.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. But like, there's a level of swearing in this that I was a bit like, Jesus Christ. And I don't know, I found this stressful because I was like, initially, I was quite thrown by the level of genuinely awful parenting on display in this TV show. But it's deliberately exaggerated. And the idea is that they're trying to externalise what parents internalise. But they're saying that this is what you want to. And they had this discussion with his wife about what duvet they would smother their children with. And I get it. But like, I was looking at it thinking, you're a terrible parent and your wife is enabling you. And frankly, that is really, really upsetting me. But I went with it after that.
Which, and a sense of humour.
I know, but therein lies the problem, doesn't it, boy?
Yes.
It does explore the mental toll that parenting does take on people, and how it's something that maybe doesn't probably get explored. I thought hats off to the division of labour in this particular relationship. I was like, fair play to him. He's taking half of all the sort of night watches. Although, and I've got to ask, in what household do two children who looked about, what, 4 and 7, something like that, are up all night and not sleeping? Like, I mean, the newborn, sure, but like, none of these kids were ever in bed. I was like, what kind of house are you running here?
I remember being 7, 8 years old and always wanting to stay up as late as possible. That's just a thing, isn't it? Some kids have that thing.
I went to bed on time.
Yeah, of course you did.
But yes, it was very, very well written, very well observed, and it just is, as Beth very correctly says, extremely stressful. But yes, that's Breeders, and Breeders drops on Sky One on Thursday, March the 12th. Finally this week, we have Mrs. Fletcher, a show that aired in the US last year and stars Catherine Hahn as a single mother experiencing empty nest syndrome when her son, who, and I feel it's necessary to point this out, is a horrific little shitbag who at no point did I ever not want to punch repeatedly in the face, When he heads off to uni, most people would, of course, have celebrated, but she was slightly upset and she has to discover a new life of her own. Now, this comes to us from The Leftovers' Tom Perrotta. Quite frankly, if the last show didn't make you want to swear off having children, then this one absolutely will. And apropos of nothing, this episode contains an unexpected hit of hardcore pornography, which I have to say took me rather by surprise and added some delightful awkwardness to my morning commute while I was watching
it. Oh my God. I thought you were going to say you watched it in the office. So,
it's
you know,
pretty fucking explicit. And I was watching it on the train and it was suddenly like, whoa, what the hell is happening? So Boyd, what did you make of this? And by that, I mean the show, not so much the porn.
Mm. Well, it kind of is all about that. This is the one I was referring to. When I said before, I think, you know, it's hard to judge on the opening. This one is going to go, it's going to all be all about this woman's, this yes. Exploration of pornography. That is the kind of big
thing. Oh, right,
thing
I didn't even know
yeah.
that.
Yeah, mm. that is the big thing of it. So I managed to, because having got tasked you, anyway, I've watched the second episode.
Yes.
So, and I think Sky's waited for it all to be available so they can show it in one go. It's partly what sometimes they wait for a long time. Initially I was like, this feels quite kind of normal, kind of not particularly challenging or bold. Certainly, like, stylistically, it's directed by Nicole Holofcener, this episode, who I love. I think I love her films, but they are quite formally unchallenging. You know, they're fairly straightforward. Do you know what I mean? In the terms, she tells the story, she establishes characters, and she lets it play out. Yeah. Almost in a kind of, you know, Woody Allen, late 70s type way. Whereas, and this felt much of a piece of her films in the way it was paced, and yet it's a half hour in quotes comedy. Mm. So I was like, oh, I'm not sure if this technique is really going to work for this show, because it feels quite uneventful, as I say. And then you think it's a Tom Perrotta story, and of course, The Leftovers is one of the greatest
yep.
dramas of all time, and a high concept, you know, thing about the end of the world in some ways, or, you know, in many ways. This, again, feels like small, suburban, but I've read quite a few of his novels, that is a constant concern of his, of course. His stuff is as much about the kind of real lives that people lead beneath the surface of the white picket fence and the suburban world. And this is going to be all about Mrs. Fletcher's discovery, use and interest in porn and other things now that she's got this empty nest and she's on her own. And this is all, this first episode was all about the empty nest syndrome, and it got, and I was moved by that, and it was quite to see her melancholy at her, as you say, total prick of a son.
He was the worst.
He was awful. Absolutely.
I have not hated a character on television as much in a very long time.
And he was so awful and almost stereotyped, like the jock, high
he
school
was
jock.
But
I felt,
worst.
Again, I felt like, oh, this is all a bit kind of unchallenging, but I think you have to carry on watching it to get to that, because it will become much more intriguing and weird. And finally enough, the hardcore porn moment is the moment, that's what it's all going to be all about.
Yeah.
And in fact, what happens to him at college is really interesting, just without spoiling it. Basically, he's this jock in high school who, you know, they're all kind of look up to and feels cool. But once he gets to the American college system, where everything is, you know, to use those tedious phrases, political correctness, wokeness, I'm not validating those phrases. I'm just saying that's what people refer to the American college system as. He has to deal with all of that. And it won't go well.
There is a sequence in this that actually really bugged the shit out of me, which I'm sure, I can't imagine you were thrilled by. The bit where he encounters his ex-girlfriend at the party and then they have a text exchange and then she comes to visit him. Yeah. And there were so many parts of that that just, I get that they're trying to make me hate this character, but I felt like there was an element of validating that kind of behaviour. Do you know what I mean? I just so deeply unnecessary. And I was also really irritated with her as well. Mm. And it's just that whole thing enraged me.
Yes, I agree with that. I think as a standalone episode, it frustrated me a little bit, although I was very excited by it at the same time. Like, I really want to see the second episode. And I came into this because we got this quite late, so I didn't read up on it. I just was like, I'll watch it, I'll see what I think on impact. And as soon as Catherine Hahn came on, I was sold, because I adore Catherine Hahn.
Yeah.
I loved her in I Love Dick. I loved her in Private Life, so the film she did with Paul Giamatti, and I loved her in Transparent. I think she's a great comedy actress, but she can also really carry big storylines in dramatic television as well. So, big fan of her anyway. But I started to see instances, like, kind of ripples of where it was going, but not till the end of the episode, by which time I was hugely frustrated with the son to the point where I couldn't really sympathise with her and just wanted the fucker out. he's like the epitome of toxic masculinity.
Yeah,
he's the product of a broken home. We established that the dad is absent largely and irresponsible and doesn't prioritise him or his ex-wife. So we get this setup is very cohesive, but it takes up all of the first episode, and it's only right at the end that you start to see that she's going to have a sexual awakening. There's a cool twist with somebody who knows the son, and when that happened I was like, oh shit, this is gonna be really good. And then the episode ended and I was like, well, for fuck's sake. So yeah, as a standalone episode I wasn't quite sold.
It's really frustrating because I think who am I to tell, but I think they could have cut down. We know how what a prick the son is.
Yeah.
You don't need that many sequences showing what a prick the son is.
Tone it down.
Get to her story quicker.
Yeah.
And it would have been so much better that first, because I think it's going to be really good as a character.
Yeah, it doesn't do a good job of setting up the show until the very end and you're not quite sure where it's going. Yeah.
This is it. She's just a doormat. You're just watching Catherine Hahn be a drippy doormat, which you know she's not programmed to be in any shape or form. So yeah, you just kind of get this build. I will be interested to see him immersed in the college system. It reminded me a bit of, you know, 21 Jump Street, where they go back to high school and they're like, what, everyone's gay and cool and like friends with each other, that's exactly what it's like. And cliques aren't a thing anymore. So I'm interested to see how he kind of recalibrates himself, which I hope he does. Obviously he can't get any worse. But yeah, as a standalone I was frustrated because I wanted to see her take off a lot quicker.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was am I the only one who found like genuinely like almost like agog at the, like, because there's a bit where she's browsing the porn site and you see a still.
You are obsessed with this porn
still. You see a porn still and I was like, oh, I said, that's surprising to you. And then there's video footage of some woman rubbing her undercarriage on some bloke's face and you're like, this is quite, you know, maybe it's just because I was on the train and the looks the woman sitting next to me gave me, I cannot emphasise enough the judgment in her face. I almost want to say, I'm really sorry, it's a legitimate I'm not sitting here on this train watching pornography.
Watching this thing, that moment, and then literally showing her the rest of it, showing it's just Catherine Hahn.
It's a proper Tom Perrotta wrote it. It's got a story.
She's going to creative writing now. It's fine. It's all fine.
Was that? But the thing is, and I swear to God, it almost seems like a terrible sitcom. That it was at that moment that she clearly looked at the screen and then did that classic thing where she just looked at me once and just sort of sighed and looked away. And I'm like, no.
I really want to see a video of this movie.
It was interesting times. But yes.
You know, there's one really sad thing about this, though. Do you know about this?
What?
That the actor called Cameron Boyce, who plays his roommate when he goes to college, died recently.
Did he?
Age 20. Oh. Yeah, really sad story. He had epilepsy. There was something, epilepsy complications. So, and he is really good. He's really, really good. I've seen him in a few things. Yeah, so it's dedicated to him at the end. But I just wanted to mention that. Yeah. Really sad story, yeah.
Well, that is Mrs. Fletcher, and this one is on Sky Comedy and drops on Tuesday, March the 10th at 10:15 p.m.
After Curb.
After Curb and late. Don't watch it on a train. Watch it in your house, on a telly if you have one. Mm. Also out this week, what have we got, Boyd?
I don't know how to do that bit. Much. That's why we had three shows from Sky.
I know. Well, Vikings is coming to History TV. Obviously, that's already been on Amazon, so it's not exciting, but that's coming to History on March 10th. What else is coming? On My Block is coming to Netflix. I don't know what that is. Project Blue Book is back. It's coming to Sci-Fi. On Thursday, March 12th. And that's about it. What would you two single out as your pick of the week?
It's a tough one this week, I think. I know what you two are going to put, probably, so I'm going to say Breeders.
Oh, I think I'm saying Breeders as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Wicked.
And Westworld Return to Form, but Breeders is...
Mine would probably be Westworld, but it's good.
Yeah.
Good.
Wait, so hang on, which one did you hate? I thought you really had a...
No, I didn't hate. No, the one, it was the one I was worried about, the Mrs. Fletcher not getting to its point until the end. I was judging it on that one episode. Mm. That's why I was talking about it.
Well, it is difficult, isn't it? Like pilot shows are often not representative of what a series is going to be because they have to cover so much ground to set up the
plan. But I actually think they've done a bad job in getting to the point of this particular story. I think they could have done it better. And I blame Tom Perrotta, I think, wrote it. I mean, you've created one of the best stories in the history of television, but come on, try harder with this episode.
Absolutely. Right, well, before we go, should we head on to the Banshee segment where we celebrate a show from the days of yore, otherwise known as Boyd's childhood?
Boyd? Yeah, because you're so young.
Young and spry with my fear of pornography. Yeah. Yes. Boyd, what have you got for us?
So I was inspired by Michael McKean, who I love in everything, and being in, what's it called? Breeders. You better just review it. I'll do that again. Michael McKean being in Breeders. I love him. He is in a show that I've been wanting to mention for quite a long time called Primetime Glick. Martin Short's character, Jiminy Glick. Have you heard of this character?
No.
Because a lot of people haven't, I love introducing people to this character.
What is it?
He is the world's worst chat show host. Jiminy Glick is like one of those Hollywood reporters that you'll see in like a tabloid-style American show, like Entertainment Tonight kind of thing. Completely moronic. Has been interviewing famous people, mostly in junkets for like most of his life. He's completely like obsessed with the world of Hollywood and stars. He happens to be grotesquely obese, but that's neither here nor there. So it's Martin Short in a big fat suit. I love Martin Short anyway. Everything he does, I absolutely love him. But I find this character incredible. And he did a whole series back in the 90s. It was 2001 onwards, where he just met and interviewed famous people. Jerry Seinfeld's in it. Michael McKean's in it. Michael McKean recurs in it quite a lot, in fact, which is why I'm reminded of him. Rob Lowe, Billy Crystal. And they're all on YouTube, I think. I certainly found quite a few on YouTube. So if you Google Primetime Glick, find it on YouTube, and you'll just see like the Jerry Seinfeld one. People like Jerry Seinfeld trying to maintain a straight face while Martin Short, as Jiminy Glick, interviews them is absolutely fucking hilarious. So there you go, Primetime Glick.
Wow, I've never heard of that.
I've never heard of that.
They even did a film called Jiminy Glick in La La Land, which I've got on DVD.
That's just tickled me.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. Honestly, the cult of Jiminy Glick is out there. Any other Jiminy Glick fans, feel free to get in touch.
I just want to hear you say Jiminy Glick over and over again. It's brilliant.
I'm happy to do that. Because I Martin Short, like, I was just thinking, Martin Short, why have I seen him recently? Because he's in the morning show, isn't he? He plays the Me Too-esque character that... That he turns up to, that Steve Carell turns up, and they're like, they're bonding, and then Steve Carell's like, oh no, you really are a predator.
You're a real predator.
And that realization that actually maybe he's not a good guy. It's a great scene.
Yeah, that scene pointing out the levels of abuse. That basically Martin Short's character is like your Harvey Weinstein as opposed to. Yeah. He's fantastic.
He's really good.
I mean, him, I could go on about him all day, but I practically am. But him, his episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is also my favourite and is phenomenal. It was in the last season. That's on Netflix.
Every episode, I always want to go away and watch what you...
Recommend, on your laptop.
Which is that's the last compliment I give. Beth,
what have you got?
So, based on mums being problematic in Mrs. Fletcher, not that she is, but you know what I mean. I went with United States of Tara, was Diablo Cody's show. It started 10 years ago, I do believe. Though watching it back and seeing young Brie Larson in it. It has to have been 10 years ago. So this is Diablo Cody, who wrote Juno, and she wrote Jennifer's Body. It stars Toni Collette, post Muriel's Wedding, pre Hereditary, playing Tara. She has a condition where her personality kind of splinters off into various different, kind of split style, I guess, but she turns into various different manifestations of her character when she's triggered by something that happens. Usually if one of her kids kind of acts out or something that she can't really control in her life, that she can't really cope with, one of these personalities like takes over. The dialogue around mental health has come on quite a lot since that show came out. There are times I've watched it and I'm like, oh, this is quite clunky in what they're trying to say about mental health issues and about having issues with personality and insecurities. But I really like the way that this show handles mental illness in a family unit and how the family, it's a wonderful cast. We've got Kia Gilchrist in it, who's in Atypical, and then John Corbett, who is Aiden in Sex and the City, who's just this wonder dad who kind of, when these different personalities come out, he finds a way to include them in the family. So Buck is this kind of butch, kind of trucker, kind of girl guy who comes out, and they take them bowling, and you know, they just find ways to kind of welcome this mental illness into the family, and it's really, really sweet and a really good cast. Brie Larson's cute as hell in it, and I really like it. Diablo Cody, I still maintain, is a brilliant writer, and
she is,
And yeah, it's on Amazon Prime, all of it, so you can watch it.
I've never seen that. I've always meant to, actually. I missed it at the time.
I watched the first few episodes. It was really good.
Three seasons it got, I think. Which,
it did, yeah.
I was surprised to see. But I
think it was on a weird channel here. Like, or even, did even get a channel, a proper, back then.
It was like Showbiz, I think it was. But now it's all on Amazon Prime.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. I think both of yours are probably better than mine. So mine doesn't really hang on to anything this week either. It's just because, frankly, I did it last minute and I was just sort of reaching for something. So in the end, I've decided to Banshee Shooter, which actually only finished in 2018. So this is quite recent. Mm. So it ran 3 years. This is an adaptation of a novel by Stephen Hunter. So this was a film with Mark Wahlberg. Did you ever watch it? Shooter?
Yeah.
Which a lot of people heralded as the new Commando, which is a good and a bad thing. I absolutely loved that film for all its unashamed stupidness. And I really, really enjoyed it. So I was thrilled when it was coming to TV. And this replaces, Wahlberg is replaced here by Ryan Phillippe, who plays the best leading man ever, Bob Lee Swagger.
Oh, God.
And Bob Lee Swagger is a retired sniper, and he gets pulled out of retirement to sort of consult on something and gets framed for trying to assassinate the president, I believe it is. And so the whole first season, and indeed is basically the plot of the film, which is him trying to clear his name while on the run, while being this crack Marine Corps sniper or whatever he is. So it's loads of fun. I really enjoyed the first season of this. It's quite fun. It explores the concept more, obviously, because of the runtime than the film did. And did I mention his name is Bob Lee Swagger? And what is not to love about
that?
Season two I watched as well. I will concede season three I just stopped, because one season was fun, and season two, which involved a Russian hitman with a broken arm, was fine as well. But season three I was like, okay, this is outside its welcome. And lo and behold, it got cancelled at the end of season three. But I suppose this is a slightly weird recommendation. What I'm actually saying is, maybe watch the first season if you like, watch season two, or frankly, you could skip it and just watch the film, which is an hour and a half, and you get much the same hit from that. But do one of those things, because it's really fun.
Amazing.
It sounds like the made-up show you would get in a show, like Framed
for trying to shoot this president, Bob Lee Swagger.
Sounds like something from like 30 Rock.
It's pretty special. It's pretty special. But there are 31 episodes of it, should you feel the need.
Nope.
Right. Okay. Well, I think none of us win that. If any of them, Whoever wins, you lose. Is I guess what I'm saying to that. Indeed. But I think that is it for another episode of the Pilot TV Podcast. Please give us all the stars on iTunes, and if you're of a mind, shower us in complimentary reviews. If you'd like to help us crowdfund Beth's TV, our GoFundMe page will be up shortly. think of it as a public service. Help a girl out. All three of us do have a tendency to tweet and Instagram from time to time, and that is a good way to keep in touch if you're on offer mind to do that as well. And you can do so at James C. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, and at Beth K. Webb. Be absolutely sure to join us next week when, the website that I check is to be believed, there's literally no TV on, but Boyd has assured me there will be shows. Will be coming. We will review them, including Julian Fellowes' Belgravia.
I think it's going to be a Julian Fellowes double bill.
Is it?
Two of his series launching the same week.
Fellows are back-to-back Fellows Fest. So Belgravia is like Downton Abbey 2, The Reckoning.
And the English game is Downton Abbey meets football.
Oh, I mean, that I'm clearly going to hate, but I'm all about Belgravia. I'm very excited about that. It's like, posh soap stuff. I can get on with that. But even if it wasn't, it'll give us a little bit of extra time to start soaking up all the Disney Plus stuff. Because Disney Plus lands, of course, on March 24th, and we'll want to be reviewing a bunch of that. And, of course, with Disney Plus comes the long-awaited arrival on these shores of The Mandalorian, which we will finally get to watch. Beth can wear her T-shirt.
I can wear my T-shirt, I can, yes.
We'll get to find out what this Baby Yoda thing everyone's talking about is. So you can all look forward to that. This is The Way. Pilot out.